So obviously the title of this event is about labor in the media, and when I contacted Mark to ask him what points he wanted me to touch on, he said to talk about the role of the media in reporting about work, which I'm glad he said work instead of labor, because as we all know, the traditional labor beat, or the labor beat as we once knew it, is pretty much in decline across major media organizations in Canada, and you know, you can see it in the title of my position, Work and Wealth Reporter. And I think we'll probably all be touching on that a little bit, and you know, there's, I think, definite cause for concern at this apparent disinterest of mainstream media in the labor movement, and how that has fed into the perception of the labor movement being irrelevant. And I think, you know, there's some definite truth in the criticism that mainstream media has either intentionally or unintentionally fed into what, you know, I think is an incorrect perception of the labor movement. But I also think, from my own experience, that reporting on work is a lot more all-encompassing than just reporting on the labor movement or labor issues more narrowly. And that's why my beat was kind of created at the Star. So I'll just talk a little bit about how my position came about and why I think it's seen as pretty fundamental to our identity as a newspaper. For those of you who don't know the sort of history of the Star, we were actually created because of a labor dispute in the late 1800s. A group of printers who were on strike essentially formed the Star to be a paper for the people, quote unquote. And our first publisher, Joseph Atkinson, was, you know, a great champion of progressive causes, things like unemployment insurance, old age pensions, minimum wage, the rights of working people to organize. And even to this day, you know, our paper is guided by the Atkinson principles, which includes the rights of working people. And, you know, no matter how the media industry has changed, no matter how the Toronto Star has changed over, you know, the past century, the past few decades, I can definitely say on a personal level that all of the reporters in the newsroom really cherish those values, and that's, I think, what, you know, makes working for the Star for a lot of us really meaningful. So whether that's always expressed in the paper, in, you know, in the editorial decisions that are made, I can't say that it always is, but I know that, you know, we all really cherish those values. You know, for example, every month we have a little internal award that goes to the reporter who's kind of exemplified those Atkinson principles in their reporting. So it does continue to be part of the identity of our paper. And I guess sort of in recognition of the decline in the traditional labor beat and the sort of constrained financial reality that a lot of us in the media are operating in, the Atkinson Foundation, which is the philanthropic arm that was started by Joseph Atkinson's family, decided to create my role as a way of talking about these issues and maybe sort of updating them to reflect the modern reality of, you know, how work has changed and what I think most working Ontarians are going through. And the other aspect of what they wanted to do, I think, was to talk about the solutions to some of these problems, because I think that's been missing from the narrative as well. And I think, again, that people, you know, we've heard a lot of sort of doom and gloom stories about the way that the economy is changing, and, you know, you can open the paper today and see my piece about, you know, the rise of low-wage work, minimum wage work. But people are also hungry for solutions in addition to the kind of expository journalism that we're trying to do. So that was really important to the Atkinson Foundation's mission in creating this role. To my mind, it's been a really great model. It's, I think, breathed a bit of new life into a beat that had sort of fallen out of vogue with a lot of papers. I mean, my paper included, we hadn't had a labor reporter at the Star for two years before I started. And you know, we're supposed to be a labor paper, so that says a lot about, you know, the kind of perception that editors have about how relevant a labor beat is. And it's also a model that gives paper a bit of a financial incentive to reinvest in these types of beats, because my salary for the next year is being paid by the Atkinson Foundation, and the Star will take over. But I think we were all a little bit uncertain as to what would happen with this beat, whether it would resonate with people, whether people would actually pick up the paper to read these types of stories, having not had this type of reporter for years. And our experience so far is that it's been hugely resonant. I mean, we have people calling in with these types of stories all the time. So, you know, I think there's a definite appetite for stories about work. That being said, I think that what resonates with people is a bit of a departure from the traditional labor reporting. I think most people identify with this new precarious workplace, one that is not unionized, that is low wage, without benefits, contract, temporary. That's kind of the lived experience that that we get a lot of phone calls and emails about. So that's really what I've tried to reflect in my work. It's not to say that union politics are not relevant. I do write about unionizing campaigns, organizing campaigns. But I think that we are less interested in, you know, the internal politics in the labor movement. I think that that is sort of inside baseball for a lot of our readers. And also, frankly, you know, there is quite a lot of infighting in the labor movement, and I'm just not really interested in it, and I don't think that most people who read our paper are. So, you know, I tend to steer away from that and focus more on the human issues that people are facing in the workplace. Some of the challenges, I'll talk briefly about some of the challenges that I face in my role as a work and wealth reporter. First of all, the scope. Once you broaden the field of discussion outside the traditional labor beat, it becomes so huge that it's quite overwhelming. I mean, work intersects with every facet of our life, whether it's family, health, you know, all of the sort of things that bring our existence to life are intersect with work. It's about so much more than, you know, wages and salary. And so for me, sort of feeling out how to direct this beat, I've had to try and feel out which issues resonate the most with people, what kind of issues we should prioritize and focus on, which has been a challenge. But I think the broader challenge is dealing with the power dynamics that come up when you're dealing with a section of the population that is extremely vulnerable in a lot of cases. You know, precarious workers have almost no protection whatsoever. They, you know, fall through the loopholes of our employment and labor laws in a major way, which is, I think, been one of the main focuses of my reporting. And of course, they don't have the benefit of union protection in the vast majority of cases. And so you're asking people who are in this incredibly vulnerable situation, that the people who can least afford to raise their head above the parapet to talk about these issues, to put their name in the paper and, you know, risk losing the, you know, sole source of income that is holding a very fragile life together. So that's incredibly difficult. And it's, you know, something that I had already sort of dealt with in my past jobs as a reporter with the BBC, working in Nairobi and other places on the continent. You do confront these extremely stark imbalances of power, where, you know, my privilege and my lived experience is so different to the people that I'm speaking to, and the challenges that they are facing are ones that, you know, I can't really relate to. And I do think that historically that imbalance of power between the journalist and the interviewee has been very evident in a lot of pieces. You know, there's often sort of a patronizing tone, or you know, the characters in the story are sort of painted as these passive, one-dimensional victims. And that's something that I've always found really distasteful about reporting. And so it's something that I've always been very conscious of in my own reporting. You know, I'm sure I don't always get the balance right, but I do try and find a way to expose the systemic issues that these individuals are facing without sort of portraying them as these one-dimensional characters. Try and show the strength and resilience that they're showing in the face of these types of challenges, rather than just focusing on the sort of sob story that I think traditionally newspapers have kind of glorified. That being said, there is a huge amount of pressure on us as journalists, and I think particularly in my field, to produce those moving human stories, because a lot of the time when we're talking about numbers, we're talking about job markets, and people's eyes sometimes glaze over when they see those statistics. So to make the impact that I think we need to have, you need the human story to bring it to life. And it's a pressure that's very difficult to contend with as a journalist, because you know I feel responsibility for the people that I'm speaking to, and you know I've had experiences where people who have spoken to me have subsequently lost their jobs. I wrote about a guy, Angel Reyes, who was a temp worker for 5 years at a factory in North York. He spoke to me about a piece about, you know, temporary employment, which really is just a way to keep employees on the cheap. And afterwards, he lost his job. And you know, that you can't help but, well, I was responsible for that, even though he had consented, you know, freely to talk to me. And, you know, I don't think was blind to the consequences of that. You know, he knew there was a risk, but you know, I still felt responsible, and I know that every person who I speak to for my stories could go through the same thing. But you know, unfortunately, we have very strict policies at our paper about using real names, so I can't offer people the protection that I often feel that they need. And you know, it's something that, you know, I continue to struggle with, and there's no real right way to report that kind of story, but you just kind of have to balance the pressure that you're getting from the editors and the responsibility that I think we have to the people that we speak to. And, you know, I think in the long term, it's in our interest to be a publication that people trust to come to with their stories, particularly with workplace stories that are so fraught, where there is a real opportunity at the moment, I think, to make some difference in the employment and labor laws in our province. The last thing that Mark had asked me to touch on was whether there's been any real impact as a result of the creation of this beat, and whether I'd seen any, successes from my reporting. And I would say that I think it's difficult from my perspective to see what kind of impact the beat has had, and I think it's also early days to be talking about what kind of impact it's having. You know, I think we are still the only mainstream paper that's really talking about these issues, but I think that the idea of precarious employment is really gaining traction, and I hope that the Star has had some role in putting it in a more prominent position in our sort of public discourse. I can definitely say that there's been a huge amount of pickup from, I think, ordinary people who read the paper. You know, for every story that I write, you know, I'll get sometimes dozens of calls from people saying, you know, I'm going through the exact same thing. And that's always quite remarkable to me because, you know, nowadays it's hard enough to get someone to buy a paper, let alone call up the journalist to chat with them for 15 minutes about, you know, their experiences. So I think that there is a real appetite for this type of reporting. And again, I do think that it is a very important time to be talking about these issues because of the changing workplace review that the Ontario government is undertaking, and because I think this is a real moment of transformation. We're only just starting to get to grips with the way that our economy is changing, and we haven't really come up with the solutions. I think that, you know, changing or updating our employment laws are important first step, but we haven't figured out the rest of it. We haven't figured out how to change social services to meet the needs of precarious workers. We haven't figured out how, I think, to replace you know, the manufacturing jobs that are disappearing. All those questions are still unanswered. So I think it's a great time and a very rewarding time to be reporting on these types of issues. But it's very early days to be talking about, you know, what kind of impact we're having. So that's really it for me. Do questions.